Hi, I'm Haik from Armenia, and I hate hiking.
That's Haik from the class of 2026. This week, we're diving deep into Haik's story, Archhumans of Minerva. Welcome to Humans of Minerva, a podcast which captures the interesting stories of humans at Minerva. I'm your host, Jules, and today I'll be sitting down with Haik from 2026. Hi, Haik. How are you? How's your summer break been going?
Hello. I'm so excited to be here today. My summer break has been surprisingly chill. I've been out in the sun, playing with butterflies, eating peach, eating cherries from my garden. So it's been very nice and very slow, you know?
It's really nice. It's actually not too far from my summer break. I've also just like, it's been really beautiful these past few weeks. So I guess you have a big garden then, and like there's beautiful nature surrounding your house.
Yeah. I really like it because I remember when I was a kid, I would plant all those trees. And again, 13 years afterwards, they're finally, you know, giving some fruits in them. So it's very emotional for me.
No, wait. So you planted those trees in your garden?
What? It's a very nice experience.
Actually, so my grandparents planted a tree for me when I was younger, and now it's actually like grown up as a lilac. But it's my grandparents' garden. Yeah. But I never planted a tree myself, but I feel like I should.
You should do. In Armenia, we have a saying, a human should do three things: plant a tree, build a house, and have a family. Yeah. So I did one of the things.
So plant a tree.
Yeah. Check.
Check.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So when are you going to build your house?
Not very time soon. I guess when I'm 25, because I have this like roadmap in my head. I think that I'm going to have a perfectly stable, like 300K a year job by the time that I'm 25. And I'm going to buy myself a house at that time too. Yeah. Very ambitious. Very. Yeah. But I hope it works. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, let's save that for later. But let's actually take the beautiful picture of you playing with butterflies and go a bit back in time.
Yeah.
So is this the house where you also grew up?
Yeah.
Where you're at right now?
Yeah, this is our only house. This is the house that I grew up. The vibe has changed drastically because I remember as a kid, I would have three of my siblings with me all the time. We would fight all the time. There would be very hectic energy, like everyone go crazy all the time. We also had cows. So my mom would milk the cows all the time. We would sell milk. But now it's just me with my parents. We don't have animals anymore. Yeah. Yeah, it's just very, a bit lonely, to be honest. But I prefer this peaceful energy more than this hectic sibling thing.
Yeah, especially like after such a busy year.
Don't say it. Yeah.
The peaceful energy, it's just it. But wait, you had cows, so you know how to milk a cow.
My mom used to do it. I used to hate the cows because they didn't smell very nice. But retrospectively, now that I look at it, it was just very peaceful, very... I didn't have any worries. The only thing that we would do is just like feed the cows, milk the cow, sell the milk, I don't know, and buy ice cream or something like that. Those are just kind of like the memories that I have from the early childhood.
You know what? That sounds like a novel scene, like, kind of like a perfect setting for like, yeah, for just some beautiful...
I actually never told that to anyone because I was kind of like ashamed as a kid of that for some reason.
Yeah, ashamed?
Yeah.
You're like, dream you lie?
No, because I thought it wasn't like civil enough because I would watch this like American high school, like Hannah Montana, blah, blah, blah. And my life was never like those American kids or anything that I would see on the TV. And I thought that something was wrong with the way that we've been living in Armenia. And it was just, I was fighting with myself. And I think I came to terms, like understanding that my life is different and it's completely okay to have the life that I used to have and the life that I have since I was like 14 or 15. So not that long ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So was it a thing that you kind of always looked up to the US as something better, or like the idea?
I think it was the media around me. I would watch, I don't know. I don't know if you heard this channel. It's called Jetlix. It's like a key channel in Armenia. It was very famous. And I was just bombarded by all those Western, American, or like European TV shows, like Power Rangers, H2O, Just Out Water, I don't know, all those things. High School Musical.
H2O, just what? Actually, that was...
I still watch it.
This is also so... Yeah, I used to binge it. Like, that was my life for like some summers.
Same.
Yeah, this... But I think that's Australian.
It is Australian, yeah. And Sinai hasn't watched it. I was shaming her. She has watched it.
Yeah. For context, Finlay is the Australian from our class.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, this is so interesting. Actually, before the podcast, we already talked a bit about that, but Armenia is a post-Soviet country, right?
It is, yeah.
Is it? Yeah. So I guess that's kind of like the change you are going through, like America being like the only superpower now, and like the one to look up to. You told me you were part of the Flex program.
I was.
How did you find out this, and how did you get into it?
So my cousin, my sister, she is an English teacher in a village like nearby. They have volunteers from Peace Corps. It's like an American organization that would come to Armenia and they would try to save Armenia. You know, these are American volunteers. I don't know. They're doing some renovations. They're working in education. They're working in the, what is it called, medicine field. They're doing all sort of jobs. And she was working with my sister, and I came to meet her. It was very nice. We talked because I was obsessed with English. I was like reading English books, watching English movies, Hannah Montana, High School Musical, H2O. I was doing all sorts of things. And then when we talked, she was like, "Hi, you could actually be in High School Musical. You could go to American High School. Like, your dream would come true." And I was like, "Wait, what do you mean? Like, how is it possible? Like, there's this State Department sponsored program. Like a few rounds you have to pass them. It's like an exam type of situation. You have to write essays. They only care about how you think, and your English doesn't even matter. But although if it would matter, your English is so good, you would definitely pass it. You have to go there. And it's actually next week. The first one is next week." And I was like, "Wait, really?" So I applied for it. I went through all the rounds. I had the interview with them, but I didn't pass that year. I was rejected and my dreams had crashed. I remember they would give us like flyers with Obama. It was Obama back then. I would rip them off. I was like, "I hate you, Obama. I hate you, America." I would cry. I was like, "I'm never going to apply to this program again." And then next year, when it was the application season again, for some reason, I forgot about my range and I applied again. And this time I was more mature and I think I was smarter a bit, just like this. And I was accepted. Yeah, I passed through all the rounds. Yeah, that's how I got into American High School.
So, yeah, maybe tell for our audience, maybe tell them a bit about what's the Flex program again? Like, what's it about? How does it work?
Yeah, so Flex program is an exchange program sponsored by State Department of America. They want the post-Soviet kids from the post-Soviet countries like Armenia, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, Litvia, Latvia, all those countries. They are doing this application process. They're recruiting those teenagers who are into American culture. Well, because it's an American cultural exchange program. And they for completely for free, they take you to America. You live with the host family for a year. You go to American high school. And you're also kind of like obligated to talk about your culture because it's supposed to be cultural exchange again. And there's this international education a week. You have to make presentations about your country. You have to make food for your host family in your traditional manners. You're encouraged to teach them how to dance, how to sing your national songs and dances. So you're supposed to share with your culture with Americans.
Yeah. Actually, from our culture night.
Tell the ones, yeah.
The tenor ones. Why, I forgot about. I remember from our tenor one that you know how to dance and that you know your part. Like your tenor one was such a one-man show. Like everyone enjoyed it so much. I can very much imagine that during your Flex program year, you had lots of time to, you know, rehearse for the tenor one for the rehearsal.
You know, it's so funny because back in the day, I didn't appreciate my country, my culture, any of those things. I would even feel ashamed to an extent, very slightly, because again, growing up, I didn't see those things. I didn't know that it was, you know, cool, quote unquote, to just be who I am. And it took me a lot of time and reflection to understand the things that I understand now about my culture, about my country, about my background. Wait, I was going to ask you a question. What's one thing that you missed the most from your home when you were in America?
This is, like, to be honest, this is such a good question. I think it's nature. Because I imagine that you're, like, even probably more remote, right? Like, you grew up, you're, like, you're in a village.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not in a village. We still have, like, 15,000 inhabitants mm-hmm. in my little town. So it's, like, not... We live, like, on the outskirts of the town. Mm-hmm. So it's literally, like, a 10-minute walk and you're right in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think I just miss, like, that opportunity of, like, being... Like, seeing a lot of mm-hmm. green. Like, even when I'm, like, you know, sitting in front of my laptop, like,
yeah.
to the left and to the right of me, there's, like, two windows.
Yeah.
And I just see, like, trees.
Uh-huh.
So
that's blissful.
So this is, like, mm-hmm. and I guess that's what I miss most. But I wanna ask you that question as well. Mm-hmm. What's, like, the thing that you miss most during your first year?
I think I missed being taken care of, because Armenians are very much thinking you as a child, especially if you're men. You have, like, many privileges. People would really, like, they would make food for you. They would clean up after yourself to an absurd level. It's like an absurd, men are not expected to wash their dishes, to, I don't know, do some, like, the very basic cleaning process and everything. And I was like, damn, now I gotta wash my own dishes. Because my American host family was like, yeah, it's just only logical that you eat and you wash the dishes. Or we would take turn. And it was very wild for me. Not necessarily wild, but it was something that I was not really used to. Although in my head, that was the right thing to do, you know? It just that never happened to be the case. And I guess I just missed... Armenians really like to force you to eat. Like, there's this thing, if you say no, it doesn't really mean no when it comes to food, because you would feel ashamed. It's not really, like, culturally accepted to say yes. Someone would offer you food. You never say yes after first time. They have to offer you, like, for multiple times, and then you say yes. Or you wouldn't even say yes at the end. They would just, like, force you to eat something or, like, drink coffee. It's, like, a cultural thing. And my host family would be like, hi, do you want this thing? And I would be like, oh, no, it's okay. I would just be polite, like, in an Armenian way. And they were like, oh, okay, no. And I was like, dude, you have to ask me, like, multiple times. What do you mean? No, I wanted the sausage. And it was very fun, yeah. I just missed this, like, very warm and very, like, sincere kind of, like, outburst of emotions in a sense, because Americans are a bit reserved. Yeah, they wouldn't show compassion sometimes. Yeah.
Wow. So how has it been coming back to your village for you? Do you still know all the people who are living around?
Oh my gosh.
Do you, like, stop by and have coffee with everyone?
Don't say that. I don't know how to hide my face, because I would walk down the street and people would just, like, start to kiss me suddenly, because, again, like, it's a cultural thing. You would just, like, kiss their cheek. They would hug you. They would, like, what's up? How are you? When are you getting married? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, please don't ask me those questions. And, you know, I started to wear, like, lots of rings when I was in America. And people thought that I was engaged. And I came with my friend, and the whole town was talking that I was engaged for a couple of weeks. And it was very funny. Everyone knows each other. It's not fun.
It sounds fun in a way.
It is, like, yeah. I miss that too. Yeah.
So you... We're talking about your flex here. You were in Minnesota. How was your host family there? Like,
I really hope they're not going to listen to this podcast. I didn't already like them, to be honest. Our basic evening would be they would sit on their phone. I would sit on my phone. I would ask them questions, but they wouldn't necessarily... they didn't want to talk to me. I just felt like they didn't have the foundational knowledge to share with me. So I would spend most of my time with friends, which, again, turned out to be a very good thing, because I have incredible friends from my exchange year. One of my friends visited me back home to Armenia when I just finished my army. Another friend visited me in San Francisco, and she even had a tattoo.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you asked.
That was it. Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember you
saying. Yeah, and yeah. She even had a tattoo with my handwriting. It says, I love you in Armenian. She tattooed it, like, out of the sudden. I was in the army. And she texts me, no, backstory. So we were hanging out once and she was like, how do you write I love you in Armenian? And with the most ugly handwriting, I wrote down I love you in Armenian. And then I went back to Armenia. I was drafted to military. And she suddenly sends me picture when I was back home, because I didn't have access to my phone in the military. And I see picture of my handwritten I love you in Armenian on her thighs. And I was like, wow. I did not expect that, and it was very magical.
Whoa, okay. This is insane. So you made a lot of good friends. Yeah. And then did you also like graduate from high school there, or did you go back to Armenia and graduate? Mm-hmm.
So I was supposed to come back and repeat my year because Armenian education system was like, we're not going to accept that as a year for you. And but the COVID hit. So I came back around like April, and we were like, I did not graduate in the US, and apparently my limit of absences was not fully in Armenia because it was not the end of the school year. So they let me take exams. So I took like 17 exams to graduate from my high school. And little did I know that I was going to be drafted to the army. I was just so excited to go to university. And they were just like, no. Yeah. So I just graduated from high school, and I was like, hike, actually you're 18. And the army officers were calling my family all the time. And my parents were like, we're not even sure if he's going to graduate because he has to take 18 exams. Because by Armenian laws, if you haven't graduated, you cannot go to army, right? But they would just call all the time. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you graduated and then you directly went to the army, like no break?
No break. I was drafted to military service. Right, when I turned 18, yeah, right after graduation.
And how does conscription, I guess there's conscription in Armenia, right? Like, how does it work? Like, for how long do you have to go there? Like,
so Armenian army is for 2 years. And when you turn 18, you are automatically drafted to the army. If you're like able-bodied, if you don't have any issues regarding your health or mental health, you're just drafted to military service. Mm-hmm.
How do you remember your first days?
Oh my gosh.
Like, how was
it? It was so bad. It was actually like a catastrophe. I had a hard time adjusting to everything. The biggest and the major thing that was bothering me the most were the mentality of the people living there. Because you have to live with like 80 guys of your own age. They just collect people based on their sex and based on their age. And they just put them together. They're like, now you got to live together for 2 years. And it was tough because they just have completely different lifestyle, and they would have completely like different scope of interest. And it was very hard for me to find common ground with them. And again, another thing that you need to know about Armenian mentality of the guys, they're very, very, I hate the word toxic masculine, but I guess this is the perfect time to use it. They're just like toxic masculine. Like if you don't fit in those like masculine standards, you're just going to be left out and just going to be ostracized. And people, when they have lots of anger inside of them, that they cannot really express their commanders. So they're just going to find someone else to express their anger towards. And my biggest concern was not to be like a ball to be used by those like people that are top of the hierarchy. So I did like a crazy ass strategized plan. I would come up with, I don't know, crazy ideas on how to like fit in. Although you might disagree with the values from the bottom of your heart, which I did. I disagreed with everything that was happening there. But I was like, hike, in order for you to survive, you just gotta be one of the wolves in the pack, you know? So I tried my best to be part of it.
Yeah. How would your days look like in the army? What would be the routine?
Oh my gosh.
There must be a routine.
If there's one thing that's routine in the army. So we would wake up at 5:30. By wake up, like, it's not like, hey guys, wake up, or alarm is ringing. It's just like the commanders would scream, wake up. And then you have like 25 seconds to get out of your bed, wear your uniform, like, I don't know, do all those crazy shit. I don't even remember what we were doing specifically right now. But it's like, just whatever I'm saying, imagine it's like someone is saying it like, yes, like in a very harsh voice. And you're also timed for everything. If you don't fit in those times, you have to do it again. If one person out of the group does not fit into time, you have to do it like multiple times unless everything is like perfectly timed.
Okay, so your first month was completely crazy, like probably like lots of new things happening for you. And then paired with that arbitrariness, that strictness that you just like pictured so well. Mm-hmm. And then a war happened.
Yeah.
How did that happen, like from your perspective?
Yeah, so I thought the first month was crazy. Little did I know what was going to come. So it was just a regular day, and we got the signal one. Signal one is we have to pack all of our things, and then we have to go to the borderline because our base is not located in the borderline. So in a few minutes, it's like the crazy siren is ringing. We are collecting all of our weapons. We're collecting all of our personal belongings, and you just like close your eyes and you open them, and you're already sitting in a car, and they're they're leading you, they're driving you to the location. And I cannot stress how privileged and lucky I was, because I'm not dead. I was in a very privileged position because I was doing the calculations for the missiles. So I would calculate how far should they go, how left should they go, how right should they go. So I would do these calculations remotely. So I didn't have to be in a first line. I was in a third line. I was in a very safe location while my friends had to go to the first line. And I'm not even talking about the people that they were, you know, attacked. So I was in Armenia this whole time and the war was happening in Artsakh. But the thing is, we didn't know if the war is going to reach out to us or not to reach out to us. So when this constant signal number one situation happening, we digged holes. So we would sleep in those holes. So if the drones would shoot us, we wouldn't be that hard. And one thing that's still in my mind, like at the night, I would look at the stars, you know, I was counting the stars. And then at one point, I couldn't distinguish stars from the drones. That we had so many drones. And I was like, wait, is this a star or this is a drone? I would talk to my commander. I was like, hey, I think we have like 7 drones at least that are like monitoring us. I was like, yeah, I know. And at one point I just stopped reporting that I see drones. And I would just wait until the drone is going to hit. I didn't even feel any anxiety. I was just like, oh yeah, the drone is there. Is that? And then I would just like play games with my friends. I was like, is this a drone or just a star? And it was just, that was our way of dealing with the drones. Yeah. It was okay. Yeah.
Oh, well, that sounds so crazy to me. Like, you know how to calculate how missiles?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That took me a lot of time to learn. It was very hard. Yeah.
Yeah, and did you do like that by hand or did you have software?
No,
like,
everything was by hand. We don't use software, so I mean.
So you did the missile calculations and then the war just ended after 44 days?
Yeah, but it's not that it was just ended. It carried lots of dramas with it. For instance, almost all my friends were forced to go to another place because like our commanders realized that nothing is happening in this kind of like side of the country. So they forced almost all my friends to go to another place. So I was left with very few people in my original position. And yeah, and then you don't have any news from them. And then I didn't know that my father also volunteered to be part of the war. He was actually one of the first people back in the 1980s that volunteered. And he was in a war, yeah, advocating for the independence and everything. So he volunteered again this time around. And my mom, I just feel the sorriest for my mom because we would leave 3 of us, right, together when my stepdad started to marry. And then I went to the army and then my dad volunteered for the war. And I just cannot imagine how stressful she was alone here all the time. Because if my situation was in a relatively safe position, retrospectively, not that we know of, my dad was in a actual like heat of the fire. He wouldn't be able to call like for 4 days or for 3 days. And we just didn't know anything about him, how else he was doing, like what's happening. And just for the context, we had 5,000 dead soldiers, which is a very big number considering we have 2 million people living in Armenia and then 5,000 people. That is just a very big number. And then the thing is, I didn't know that father was in a borderline because they didn't want to make me worry and everything. So I didn't have clue that my father was there too until the end of the war. And then they told me about it. Accidentally, they never was going to tell me about it. I've heard of survivor's guilt. I still to this day, I feel very bad, especially when I was in America. I was living my life while my friends were still in the army. And then the war is never over. I think a few days ago, 4 people died again. And this feeling of I'm out there living my life happily ever after while 5,000 people died and are continuously being dead. It's a big thing to carry with you. And I don't know, I've been working with therapists not to blame yourself because again, the fact that you are able to meet this new people, meet you, meet all the Minerva, have my experience, I don't want to minimize the importance of my own decisions and blah, blah, blah. but the fact that missile just didn't happen to hit me is...
Well, yeah, this actually... I don't even know what to say. Like,
I'm okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, but this sounds like a heavy, very heavy weight to carry. This is... Yeah. Wait, so your dad didn't make it?
No, my dad was okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he survived? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He's super cool. He's better than me.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah, yeah.
So during your, like, let's say, like, first 3 months in the army, you had, like, a crazy first month just adapting. Then you went to war. You went to war. And then you lost all the friends that you made during the first month. And then you got back to your base and just said, like...
Yeah, and I continued to live like that.
Yeah.
I think at one point you surpass all your negative emotions because you don't have any opportunity to actually tackle them. And you continue to live like nothing happened. But it's actually very dangerous for you to do. But that's what we all did. We pretended nothing happened and then we continued like with our lives. The thing that you've been trying to build for 18 years, like all the movies you watch, all the clothes that you wear, all the music that you love, they don't matter anymore because you're just a number. And it's just like you don't have anything else to build the foundation of friendship, but rather than just a personality wise, like you don't care about what's your favorite movie anymore because we don't talk about movies. You just like now identify people who have cool sense of humor, who are compassionate, who are this and who are that, who are closer to your nature as a human being. And I think those friendships are very magical. Yeah.
Yeah, especially because they came into being like such a time of hardship. So it's also like something like it's very connecting that you
it is
made it. Like, tell me maybe about like your closest friends that you made in the army. Like,
yeah, okay. Another important thing to know about my army experience is again another layer of privilege because after the war, they kind of started to recruit people that were good at English and they know how to use computer. Like secretly, they were like, do you know how to use computers? Do you know how to use Word? Do you know how to use Excel? And I was like, yeah, sure. And they unofficially hired me as their like a private assistant type of situation. I would have my own room. I would have the keys to my own separate room where I would have access to computer and I would just do the work for the commander because they were just dumb. They didn't know how to use Excel. That would give me lots of privileges. At one point, I stopped marching on the sun all day, every day, because I moved a bit upper to the hierarchy. Yeah, and then at one point, I met my friend, who is, again, it's not a textbook definition of how men should be in Armenia. He is an artist. He would listen to the same music that I would do. And then we started to talk about those things and that's how we connected. That was the first person that I would be friends with in the army, you know, with all those other people, with like 75 guys. I know I would probably never be friends with like in real life because there was nothing that would connect us. But the army made us connect. But with this specific person, his name is David, we just became friends. He would also do the computer work. We would do that together. We would like create art together. We secretly accessed a commander's playlist from the computer. And we would listen to music. We would drink coffee. We would have like our like a small privileged life inside of that room. Yeah, it was very nice.
Wow, it's such a bad situation. I can imagine so many people just become broken through that experience. And it seems like you managed to preserve some of the things that actually made you you. Like the music, you know. Okay, maybe wrapping that army time that was so like shaping and for you.
Yeah.
Do you remember the day you came home, like the day your service ended?
Oh my gosh. I was actually crying my eyes out because I didn't want it to come. it was a stay comfort zone for me. At one point, again, I was listening to music with my friend. I knew what I was supposed to do. It was a set strict routine. And I knew that once I get out of the army, I'm going to come to San Francisco to Minerva. I knew what's going to wait for me. I knew that it was going to be very challenging for me. And I was super fine. And I kind of like paved my way to the top of the so-called hierarchy. And I was in a very, very privileged position. And I was like, wait, I'm going to miss my friends here. I'm not going to have this stable lifestyle anymore. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But in the army, you know exactly what's going to happen at any given second. And you just lose this stability. I was not excited. I was crying. I didn't want to go home. But over.
I also feel like Minerva is kind of like the opposite of that army time, the way you described it.
Yeah.
Because Minerva life is very much unpredictable in many ways. And very much like, and it's everything but stability. Like, it's everything but that. So that must have been also not easy, like kind of like transitioning into the Minerva life. Before we talk about that, like, how did you apply for Minerva? Like, when did that happen? Because like, so in my mind, 2020, you graduated from high school, you went straight to the army for 2 years. It's 2022. And we started our semester in August 2022. So how, like, without access to the internet, how did you make that happen?
I applied while I was still serving in the army. To be honest, after the war, I had this very low period where I didn't have motivation for anything else. I was like, I don't care. The world is fucked up. The world is messy. People are killing each other for no reason.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to change. So I didn't know what else to do with my life. And then at one point I was like, for the kids that died, for all these young people, for all these dreams that were completely crushed, I'm going to do it for them. So I was like, I need to take actions. I need to take responsibility for the situation that I'm in. And I started to search for the college that I really liked that would fit in to my own understanding of how higher education should be. And my friends told me that there is this thing called Minerva that you would travel each semester. That's one thing that got me. And then the more I explored it, the more the no lecture system really kind of like shaped me. I was like, this is it. I want to do civic partnerships. I want to do internships. I want to have real life experience. And yeah, that's how I learned about Minerva. And then I took a 3-day vacation. I came home. I didn't have a laptop at the moment. So I asked my mom to get a laptop from her friend. So we borrowed the laptop. I did the challenges. And then I started to work on my accomplishments. And then at the when we would have to go to bed after like 11:30, I would call my friend and I would tell her, I would speak out loud my accomplishments and she would type in to my application thing. Yeah. I would work throughout the day on my like sketchbook and then she would do them for me. And then it was also like, you have to submit an ID, right? For the application process to be finalized. I didn't have ID because when you go to army, they take away your passport and then you don't have passport anymore for 2 years because you're not a citizen. You just belong to the government. You just exist only in army. You cannot do anything. And I had to get an ID from the military base. I had to make an official ID that I live in a military base, which again took lots of connection and networking to use. And then it was crazy. And then I went to our doctor, because he was the only person that had access to internet from the base, who would go home and then come back every day, and he would carry his personal laptop. And I was like, please, I have to submit my ID. Please, please, please. And then at one point when I finished the application, I sneaked in the phone, and I remember the message that I got in. It was very funny. I went to the bathroom at 7 in the morning, and of course you cannot use your phone very publicly. So I went to the bathroom to use my phone. And then I got a mail from Minerva. And just for the context, no matter what you're doing, you have 20 seconds to be ready. And I was like, oh no, what am I supposed to do? I want to know the answer. But I couldn't know. So I went to the gym with this heartbeat that like, did I get in or did I not get in this whole time? And then we went back after like 4 hours so doing things. And we came back. I went to the bathroom again. Yeah, and then I opened in and I got in. Yeah, it was funny. Yeah.
Wow. Well, so we were talking about like how Minerva is actually like the opposite of the army. Just like maybe a few words on how the transition was for you, like coming to San Francisco.
It was hard there. I was crying for the first few weeks. It was just unbearable. I didn't like cry that much in the army. Maybe because it was not environmentally really pro crying, because there was no private spaces to cry and you just couldn't cry in front of everyone. I don't know. I guess all those emotions that were hidden inside of me, I just let it flow. I thought that I was failing my family who supported me along the way. I thought that I was failing all the people that financially helped me. I thought that I'm just a failure. Who am I to think that I could handle this? Like, I was like, this is such a humbling experience for me. Because in every room, I would be like, quote unquote, the smartest. And people would always praise me for being cool and being smart and everything. But in Minerva, everyone is like that. Like, you're not the cool kid anymore, because everyone is the cool kid. And it was just such a humbling experience. I loved it. Not that I loved it. But in the moment, I was like, oh my gosh, who are you? Who do you think you are, Hike? Just drop this. Plus, you know, I came later, right? So I had this like FOMO. I had this big FOMO. I was like, people don't know me. They had this bonding experience at the foundation week. Everyone already created like group friendships, blah, blah, blah. And no one is friends with me. So I thought that I should make friends with everyone. I should talk to everyone. I should become someone's bestie, blah, blah. Because my army instincts were like, you gotta make sure that these people like you for your own survival. These are just like army things that just were so hard to get out of it. It was very hard for me. I think I'm still kind of like navigating through friendships in Minerva because it was just so out of my comfort zone. I think that if there's one thing that people should know about me is that I like to surprise myself and I like to surprise people around me. I would do things that they don't expect me to do, or I don't expect myself to do. And that was a point where I was like, dude, you gotta prove that you're actually a decent. Yeah.
Yeah. And it got better, right? Like second semester?
It did. It did. Yeah, it was very nice.
And now you're back home and you're kind of like getting a break finally.
Yeah. I let it loose. I am not doing anything. I'm just reading books and watching Netflix all day, every day. And yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, how are you going to make 200K when you're 25? How does your roadmap look like?
I trust the process. My life has been proving me that so long as you have this goal, the universe or whoever you want to call it, it's just going to give you the right opportunities and it's going to make you in the right circumstances so you would make the best out of the situation that you're in. And I believe it. I don't worry how I'm going to do it in this stage of my life. I'm kind of like worrying on creating the Skillshare, creating the foundation of how am I going to be as a person, what skill set I'm going to have, or what kind of professional I'm going to be when I'm already venturing in my professional career.
Okay, I guess it's time to move over to our fast fire round of questions. What's your favorite artist? Because I know you're an artsy person.
Artist?
Yeah.
Lord, my favorite artist ever is Lord. I love her. I am hyped because of Lord. She has influenced me so much. I cannot stress it enough. Yeah.
What's your favorite song by Lord? What's it? What's a song everyone should listen to?
Hola. It changes all the time. But I would say Basket Season. That's my army anthem. Because I buzzed my hair off and I was like, I'm one of the Lord dudes now. Basket Season is so fire.
What is your word of the day?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would say serendipity.
Such a good word. There's a book called Serendipity.
Ooh.
And I think, what's one thing you want to do this summer?
I want to make a short movie. Yeah.
Wow.
About
okay.
My neighbor. Yeah.
Here's your accountability. You're going to show me your short film in Seoul.
Yes. Okay.
Nice.
Yes. Sounds like
okay.
A fan. Yeah.
So, like, let's wrap this episode. It was so nice talking to you. I really appreciate you opening up about the hardships in your life, like your army experience.
Of course, it was my pleasure.
What's the best way to connect our audience to reach you if they want to connect with you and have follow-up questions?
So, as you remembered my introduction, I say that I'm hike and I hate hiking. And my Instagram is exactly hike hates hiking. H-A-Y-K hates hiking. Yeah.
True. True. I didn't even like
Well,
it's
I didn't even ask.
It's a wordplay.
So, hi, thank you so much for being on the show. Such a pleasure to have you on the podcast, and I wish you a lovely day.
Thank you so much, you too. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Bye. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and automatically get notified about new episodes on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at humansofminerva.podcast for all the latest updates and announcements. And finally, special thanks to our editor, Ang Lilian, for working her magic on this episode. Thanks for listening to Humans of Minerva.